Hi, I'm Archit.
And I'm Shirin.
And welcome to Getting Lost with Archit and Shirin, a podcast where two amateur cooks,
if you say so,
talk about all things food, from ingredients, recipes, techniques, and lessons from our trials in the kitchen. Every episode, Shirin, our producer Natasha, and I will do a deep dive into one singular topic and talk about literally everything we know.
So Archit, what are we talking about today?
Today, we are taking our first dip, or should I say sip, into the world of wine. This fermented grape juice is by far one of the most elusive drinks to me. For how much I have loved having wine, there isn't enough that I know about it. In this episode, we delve into the basics of wine, and we have an amazing guest who joins us in this conversation to help us build a toolkit for how to choose the right wines and the best ways to drink them, that you're ready for that upcoming dinner party. Let's get started.
Elusive, really? Does wine run away from you, Archit?
I mean, it is confusing.
Does a bottle just sprout legs and go like...
Well, it like, you know, each bottle has its own definition of what it is, and then you try and drink it and you have no idea how that definition came about. So that's where the elusive nature of it comes.
Your thirst, so to speak, to learn more is just on fire.
I know. I'm very excited.
Okay, cool. Great. I love wine. I have to call that out. It is not at all elusive to me. In fact, I am a magnet and wine just comes towards me. So quite the opposite of Archit here. I don't know the first time that I actually had wine, and it's good that I don't remember, because like, you know.
Good and bad, I guess.
Yeah, but... what I can say very confidently is, unlike beer and whiskey, where those two had to be an acquired taste for me, wine was an immediate hit. And maybe it's because I started with white, and I probably would have started with a sweet wine. But, I mean, I can't have sweet wines anymore. So I have a feeling that my father like initiated me into this step by step very knowingly. And being a man who really loves wine, I think he did a good job, too good a job sometimes is what I feel. I mean, don't remember the first time, but know that I've loved wine since I've ever had it, and I've grown to be more open to experimentation. I think there was a bit of a phase where I was like, I only like white wine. No such thing anymore. I will drink everything. But you tell me, Archit, since it's been so elusive, tell me a little bit about the first time you had wine, what your feelings are towards it, your relationship with wine. Yeah. Tell me, Archit.
I don't know. Like, I think the first time I had wine was probably in college. I don't think I had wine before that, which is surprising. I think it's one of those things that are like starter alcohols, right? Like everyone has something or the other prior to, or at least during that like rebellious stage of adolescence. But I don't think I did. And I also don't think I really enjoyed it for the first few times that I had it. But like you, I'm like presently surprised that I liked the whites, and that's where I started off from. Because, you know, traditionally, even like pop culturally, I feel like everyone has a red wine as their like starter wine, which is fascinating to me. I really like really light and like, really light and cold wines. That's what I prefer. Mm-hmm. And what I've learned through just drinking a lot of different wines is the fact that I really like wines that are also either a little aerated or a little light. So like I really enjoy a Riesling for some reason. But I wouldn't like a very fruity wine. Like, I just don't find that fun. It then feels like a cocktail to me, which isn't exciting.
I think you like fruity wines, you just don't like really sweet wines. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Okay.
I don't have the terminology down.
That's fine. Listen, I know very little as well. And fun fact, whenever we travel, and before the pandemic, we would try to take at least one family trip a year. Our family will basically choose the destination based on like, where are there like lots and lots of vineyards where we can just go and like vineyard hop. And I have attended so many wine tastings and so many classes. I don't remember Jack, because unlike, you know, like a normal person who at a wine class or tasting. We'll have a little sip. They'll put four glasses of wine in front of me to taste. I'll have all four of them. Then I'll move on to the next station. So you and I are together in not knowing too much about wine, which is why I'm really glad that we have a guest today.
Yeah, I know. It'll be really interesting to get their point of view in it. But actually, I wanted to ask you, like, you know, I actually haven't ever had like a wine tasting in like a vineyard. I don't think I've ever been to a vineyard either. But like, I do know that like there's a lot of like different ways in which they define a flavor of wine. And I just wanted to know from you, like, you know, what has been like the craziest flavor that someone has told you about? And were you able to like even remotely like taste it?
I think limestone.
Limestone?
Yeah. Okay, let me back up a little bit. No. Let me back up. This is Alsace, or if that's how you say it, in France. And I think they were describing the nature of the soil, and they said that you, me, and Prithvi can, when we bring him on, we can ask him. Excuse me. That was the strangest thing that I've been asked to look out for, and I was like, sure. More, I have more.
What does limestone even taste like? I don't know.
I don't know. We will ask Prithvi if this is like, if my memory serves me right, and also if like. I really do think it was limestone, and I think that they were talking about the soil. But just to be clear, at any such experience, they will talk to you a lot more about the grape and the soil than the wine itself.
Interesting. FYI.
So your little sciencey brain, which goes all like, oh my God, I studied biology in college. It's going to like...
Or it's my only time, like, I studied, actually, as much chemistry as I did biology, which is kind of really, really sad that I don't use any of that anymore. So that's why, like, I force fit it here.
Hey, cooking is a lot of chemistry.
Yeah. And aren't you excited that I don't have any fun facts? Like, I actually purposefully did not have fun facts this time,
I'm so excited. Guys, I'm really, really glad that Harshit is moving away from his little rebellious phase where he came to each episode armed with more facts than anyone cares to care about. So thank you. Thank you, Harshit. Yeah. You've been listening.
I know.
As much as you've been speaking.
There's a reason for that as well. You know, like, I don't have wine facts, but because I have a lot of questions, and clearly, like, it'd be better to get an expert in to actually answer those than just, you know, searching for them on the web and getting various opinions. And that's where you and I kind of decided that the best way to kind of navigate this really, really popular topic, hopefully for the listeners as well, is to get someone who spent their entire professional life learning and tasting spirits from all over the world.
Yeah, I'm gonna quickly introduce our guest now that we've alluded to him so mysteriously for so long. We've got Prithvi Nagpal on our podcast today. He's actually one of the youngest sommeliers and critics in the world, and is on course to complete his WSET level 4 diploma in wines. And apparently that's a big deal in Hong Kong. He's extremely passionate about wines and spirits. He runs a beverage consultancy and a luxury wine and spirits review page on social media, where he reviews premium artisanal wines and spirits to create awareness and help grow the culture. So anyone who is growing the culture of drinking in my beloved city is more than welcome on our podcast. So hi, Prithvi.
Hello. It's thank you guys for having me here. This was you guys had a very delightful conversation, I must say. I was very intrigued, and I wanted to butt in and add something at every point. it's fun. It's an interesting conversation you guys had. Hi, Archit.
Hi, Prithvi. Thank you so much for being here. One of the other things that you didn't, or at least Shirin didn't mention in her bio, that I found, I feel like was like claim to fame, for at least for me, because that's how I found out about you, was the fact that you reviewed Aviation Gin, and then like Ryan Reynolds liked it.
Yes.
I feel like that was such a...
Yeah, he did. That's true.
That was like a... Yeah, how did that feel?
That was a mind-boggling moment to me.
Yeah.
That it was quite crazy because even Aviation Gin ended up sharing it on the Instagram. And then I had to really, I was checking, I checked the profile a few times to see if it was actually him because I wasn't sure if it was him. And then when my friends, it was funny because when my friends were sharing it, and like my comments are basically just like everybody's just tagged Ryan Reynolds in it.
Yeah.
So that he can actually comment or share. Yeah. Because imagine if he'd shared it, that would have been quite crazy.
Know.
Who would have thought that some boy sitting in Haryana would have been making like an Aviation Gin review?
Yeah,
and Ryan Reynolds is gonna like or share that thing. But yeah, that was quite cheesy.
Ryan Reynolds, amazing.
And that's a really good gin too.
Do you have some lying around?
Yeah,
I do. It's actually available in it's available here in our city.
What?
Yes, Where? It is. Yeah, it is. It's available in a few stores that I know of. But it's a tad bit expensive, but it's a really, really good gin.
Interesting. Well, okay, we have something to DM Prithvi about. We're just going to be like, hey, when are you coming over with your Aviation Gin? And we can
whenever. So I just wanted to add very quickly before, you know, Archit said something along the lines of how, like, wine, like, you know, the people tend to run away from wine before they can actually get into wine. And it was something that confused Shirin in the beginning. But it's true, you know, wine does have this certain anxiety about it. Like, people have this certain anxiety when it comes to wine. People think that in order to drink wine, it's important to know everything about wine or they'll say something incorrect. And that's why people don't kind of get into wine. But it's like skiing, you know. Like, how do you know you like skiing until you don't really try skiing? You can't know everything about skiing before you get into it, or for any other sport or any other art that you get into. I think it's very important for us to get rid of this thing that we have about wine. We need to be able to taste the wine first, fall in love with that wine, and then say, okay, I need to devote some kind of time to understanding this beverage. If you don't love wine, you can't truly. You have to make this sort of emotional connect with wine, and that's what I'm trying to spread as well, and that's what I'm trying to take out the snobbery from the wine industry and trying to take out this extremely exclusive thing. I mean, wine's for everybody. Wine's it brings people together. The job for wine over the years has been to bring people together, and I think that's what's important, and that's what I try to kind of spread through my videos and what I'm trying to do today as well. So yeah,
I love that because, like, honestly, nothing cheeses me off more than someone who acts super pretentious about their wine. And for me, wine is a very, like, first date drink because you don't want to go, like, for the hard liquor. And, like, it tells you so much about how a person, you know, is, the way that they order their wine, the way that they... Like, I love it when someone's like, okay, listen, I don't know enough, but based on the little that I know, here's what I think could be a good fit for tonight.
Absolutely. The number of people that come up to me that say that, you know, I'm going on a date, what are the 5 things that I should say to somebody? You know, that, and she's like, she's going to fall in love with me. And I'm just like, listen, man, there are a few things you can say because there's nothing that's nicer than when somebody knows their wine, or when somebody, like, regardless of the kind of information they have, even if you, like, check up a wine list before you go to a restaurant, it can make all the difference in the world, you know, because how somebody orders their wine and how somebody conducts themselves while, like, a wine is being served, wine is being poured, or just says, like, 2 or 3 nice things about the wine can change the way somebody's perception is about the other person in a first date.
No, Prithvi, I'm actually on the other side of this. What I'm saying is that I don't like it when people try to be super snobby on a first date and pretend to know more than they do know. And they're all like, oh, I'm so fancy, and oh, I'm so this and that. And it's just such an instant turn off. And I feel like wine's a great way to test that about someone. So of these people who come to you to ask about first date, tell them that a lady's perspective is that if you're going to try to be something that you're not,
I should let them know that. Makes sense. If I'm ever going to a restaurant and I have to order wine, the first thing I do is always ask the sommelier or the restaurant manager of that place what kind of wine I should have. Because, I mean, there's no better person than them to tell me what's a good wine and what isn't a good wine.
This is true. You know? And if they point you towards more expensive wine, you know you're in trouble.
Oh, yeah. Like, you're not. Yeah, that's not happening.
The more important thing with them is also the fact that they will know what is in stock and what's been keeping well more than Absolutely. Anything else. That's what I feel Absolutely. Like asking them is so important.
It's very important. Very, very important to ask the servers, because they know best what's moving, what's not moving, and what people are liking these days as well, and what's new on their wine inventory list, and what's not being stored well also.
So, okay, Prithvi, let's get into you a little bit, because I think your intro was that you're also one of the youngest sommeliers, and okay, you're from India. We're probably from the same, like, you know, circles of families, which means that how the hell did you get into this, like, really unique career where we know everyone wants to be an engineer? I studied biology for no reason, right? So, like, what, how do you get into that?
So I've always wanted to get into hospitality. My family okay. comes from a hospitality background, and there's this certain thing about hospitality, like there is to, not like there is to wine, but at least there is something with hospitality. I was good in school, academically, but whenever like I would tell people that I want to get into hospitality, they would say, why do you want to get into hospitality? You score well, you get good marks. Why do you want to get into hotel school? And all of this. And I was like, I really don't understand what that means. I just want to get into hospitality, because I've been pretty much born and brought up around hotels. Like, my first fascination was going into hotel bathrooms and checking out how well made the bathroom was. And there's a certain fascination I have with hospitality, with serving people, with speaking to people and engaging in stories. And I said, I might as well just do that, because hospitality gives me the platform to do that. So I did. I got into hospitality, and I said, oh shit, I hate it here. And I went to hotel school with the Oberoi, and I said, man, I cannot do this. But what I can do is I love wine. So why don't I see if I can get into, we had this wine course, as part of our curriculum, and we were doing the wine course, and I was really enjoying the whole storytelling aspect of it. And then when I'd gone in the summer, I went to Europe. I traveled through the vineyards. I spoke to people. I said, man, this is something that I could do. Just the whole, the kind of, when you speak to winemakers in Europe or any other place, actually, even in India now, I've seen this, is that when you speak to these winemakers about, they talk about wines like it's their own child. And it kind of is. It is their own product. There's this kind of soul. They've added, they've nourished it, they've grown it, they've harvested it, they've looked after it for 6 months, 7 months, and then, you know, they blossom into such beautiful wines and grapes, and then the amazing wine that comes out of it. It's been part of cultures for so long that it's just life for them. And that's when I said that, you know, this is what I want to get into. And I was like, I could settle in a place like France in the Rhone Valley, or in Bordeaux in Burgundy. And I said, let's see what I can do, what I can do. And this is the kind of storytelling I wanted to bring back to the country, and I wanted to share with people. And I say that listen, there is something that these people genuinely love and care about, and that's wine. And it's such an amazing thing, you know, like, for example, if us three were sitting over wine, the conversations would be so much more different as well. You know, when you sit with somebody over wine, whether it's a meeting, whether it's your social circle, whether it's just over a meal, wine can change conversations. And the busier that we're getting in our lives, wine plays a very important instrument in bringing us together and bringing that kind of thing together. And I think that's what I love about the whole idea of wine, how passion driven these people are, because it's very difficult to find passion as well. And if you meet any of the winemakers, you're just meeting passionate people. And that's a very difficult field to be in as well. It's not easy to make wine.
No, I have to agree with you. And I do love the fact that people treat their wines like their children. And I know what you mean, because I've heard a few of those conversations, and it's really sweet. And also agree with the whole bit about how wine just changes the pace of the evening that you're kind of, you know, going ahead with. But we have a few specific questions.
Sure.
And we're like curious little cats here. Can you, in under a minute, tell me how wine is made? Because a lot of times there are all these memes about, like, grape, mama's grape juice. It's not juice, but it's more than that. So tell us how wine is made, please.
Okay. So very simply, wine is an alcohol beverage made with fermented grape juice, right? So you harvest the grape, you crush, you press, you put it into a fermentation tank or a steel tank, and then the process of fermentation starts, which is basically you put in either artificial or natural yeast, like synthetic yeast, and then the yeast converts the sugar into alcohol, and that's how wine is made. Once you have that alcoholic beverage, you tend to either age it, you try to finish it, fine it, filter it, and you make it available for consumers to drink it. But the whole process where wine is made is actually not when wine is made, but when it's growing in the harvesting period. That's when the wines really need to be looked after. And that's when you'll hear of a word called the terroir, which is the most important thing when it comes to wine drinking. And I just want to quickly, in four words, say what terroir is all about. Terroir is about the aspects, the climate, the soil, and the tradition that the way the wine is made. These four things is how wine is made, really.
Fun. Okay, interesting. So in all of this, Archit, did anything stand out to you? Because I'm pretty sure that your antenna is up.
You know, it's really funny that Prithvi, right before the conversation, you said that you didn't like coffee and you didn't understand coffee. But everything you just said also relates to coffee. Because like, if you talk to someone who makes coffee, they talk about the same aspects. But of course, wine is just a much older process of doing the same things. One of the things that I found really interesting is that you did mention the fact that, you know, there is yeast put in to the wine, and that could be artificial or natural. That's very interesting. But the second thing is that you also talked about how wines are finished. And one of the things I was reading upon was the fact that sometimes when you actually want to finish wines or create, I don't know what that specifically means, but they use eggs and egg whites, and which is just fascinating to me, just because we live in a country where we have lots of like this non-egg vegetarians out there, and I really want to know, like, is wine technically vegan/vegetarian or not?
Great question, Archit. But I want to go back to the first thing that you had said about how coffee is made in a similar way. I think it's very true. But also, a lot of what we consume, a lot of the production techniques which are used are very similar in all ways. And going back to how I started off the podcast, saying that you have to fall in love with the product first and then kind of get into the passion and the education for it. I just didn't get coffee. That's why I never really got into it. Now, coming back to egg whites. Yes, egg whites are used in... egg white is basically a clarifying agent. So it is used in the fining process of a wine. Wines are often very cloudy and have a lot of these textures which aren't... they're not really appreciated when the final bottle comes out. And they also help extract a lot of the harsher tannins which are there in the wines, which are the bitter, coarse aromas that you get from a wine, especially in red wine. So egg whites acts as a very good clarifying agent. They're basically suspended in there. And then it's a very quick way of getting rid of unnecessary particles that you need. And it's a fining or a filtering method, if you say. Now, there is no discovery found of any residual egg which is ever found in the wine. So in a way, the wine is not vegan, but it's safe to drink. There are also clarifying agents like fish bladder, which is used in wine. So vegetarian or non-vegetarian, there's a lot of that. There's milk protein, which is used. There's a lot of like animal bone stuff, which is also used as clarifying, fining agents, which is why it's very important for us. And which is what I also tend to do is I tend to tell people a lot about how your wine is made, which is why you have so many sustainable, organic, vegan, natural wines now in the market as consumer trends have shifted to organic and stuff. So a vegan wine, if you ever come across a vegan wine, and there are a few in our country, in our city actually, available in a few stores, are wines which are made out of, they don't use egg whites or any other animal product. They use stuff like bentonite clay, which is a vegan particle to use. They use stuff like seaweed. Another very important thing which is used in winemaking is sulfur. You know how some people say that they get a headache when they drink wine?
Yeah.
So that's because of sulfur. Most people that are getting headaches because of drinking wine, it's because of sulfur. Sulfur acts as an antiseptic and an antioxidant for the wine. So it keeps bacteria away, and it also keeps oxygen away. Oxygen can spoil a wine when wine is being made. So sulfur helps. It needs to be continuously added onto a wine to keep it away from oxygen. That way the wine stays fresh, but it's also bad. Too much sulfur is not good for you. That's why organic wines and sustainable, biodynamic, natural wines do not use sulfur or use very minimal amounts of sulfur to keep the wine as free and naturally clean as possible.
Interesting. Prithvi, I haven't had a quote-unquote natural wine, but I've actually heard a lot about them. Have you tasted natural wines? And if yes, do they taste like
yes.
the regular wines?
Yes, I have tasted natural wines. They taste very, very different from other wines. It's a very controversial topic in the wine world. My research topic for my WSET was on natural wines because natural wines can have very distinctive aromas and flavors, but a lot of the times people say, oh, but it's good for you, so it's okay. But I don't think that's true. I think sometimes some kind of things need to be added. Like, it's good not to use fertilizers and only using man-made stuff to kind of fine your plants and all of that. That's okay. But I have a problem with people that are selling their natural wines, often saying they are good wines when they're not. It's very difficult to make good natural wine. So there are definitely people out yep. there that are doing it because it's a very difficult task to do. But I think because of this upward trend of just natural stuff, a lot of average products are also doing very well.
No, I agree with you on that principally, because when it comes to stuff like skincare as well, there's this massive marketing trend of just saying because it's organic, it's good for you. Or just calling out no sulfates, no phosphates, etc., etc., etc.
No parabens and all of that.
Yeah,
right? Like
no nasties.
Those are like keywords. Those have just become keywords to like any product.
People end up focusing a lot more on what's not in the product, and then they get distracted from what actually is in it. So you look at the front of the product, you're like, oh, this is great. It doesn't have so and so and so. But you've also got to flip it around and see what it does have. Because
absolutely.
It's a double-edged sword.
And I think with wine is that at least you can taste it, right? So if you don't like it, then it's not a good natural wine. And no sommelier or no sommelier or critic can tell you otherwise. It's as simple as that. You and I could be tasting a wine that I love and you dislike, and you're okay if you say that. If you say, Prithvi, I don't like it, I'm going to say, yeah, it's probably not your taste then. It's not like, oh, but this is such a great wine, I don't understand how you don't like it. I think that's a horrible way of going about things, and that's the way it should work with natural, organic, commercial, whatever wine it may be. You know, if somebody likes Jacob's Creek tomorrow, and I say, oh, I don't drink Jacob's Creek, doesn't mean it's a bad wine. I mean, it's made its way because it's a decent wine in itself, you know. So it's I think people need to get over themselves and just, it's just wine, man. Just be casual about it. If you enjoy it, you enjoy it. If you don't like it, you don't like it. Just, it's quite simple.
Yep. Another question, though, and I'm going back to what you said about the process of wine being made and what spoils wine. So oxygen spoils wine, too much oxygen, right?
Yes.
Tell me a bit about aeration, because based on my limited understanding, like there's this whole process of decanting, and I only do that with the reds and specific reds. And there's this whole process of just leaving your bottle open to breathe for some time. And again, it's like there's so much literature out there. Would love to have a definitive point of view on A, what aeration is, B, what it's good for, and C, what not to do while aerating your wine.
Sure. Great question. See, when wine is made, it's extremely complex. When you put a wine through barrel aging processes where it goes into oak and stays there for 6-7 months, it adds a lot of complexity and textures into it. Even while winemaking, for example, for Chardonnays, a process like malolactic fermentation is used where malic acid is converted into lactic acid, and it adds this kind of very buttery aroma to the wine. Now, what happens is, think of it as a wine is trapped in a bottle, right? It's a 750-milliliter glass bottle. The more surface area it needs, the more surface area it gets, the better it is for the wine to open up. Because you've heard of this term a lot when you say aeration, is you want to let the wine open up. You want to let the wine breathe. Think of it as being trapped in the bottle, and now you're really letting it breathe and letting it come out. I tend to, anything that has been aged, I will aerate it. Because I want to extract the maximum flavors and aromas that I can from that wine. So decanting is an extremely important process. Otherwise, or what you can do is, to give you the best idea of decanting, is the first glass, if you're drinking something which is a little more medium or a fuller-bodied wine, for example, let's say it's from a hot climate like Australia, and you're drinking a Hunter Valley or a Barossa Valley wine, your first glass to your second glass will change completely. It'll be considerably different from what you tasted the first glass and then how it opened up in the second glass, which is why it's very important to aerate everything. If a white wine has also seen oak aging in its life, then it's important to aerate it as well. Oxygen after the wine is made is a brilliant thing for wine. Oxygen while the wine is being made is not a great thing for wine. I think that should, does that sum it up well enough?
And is that the reason why you don't have a lot of aeration done for like a white wine versus a red wine?
Yes, that's true. So think of it this way. White wines normally grow well in cooler climates. In cooler climates, you don't have that kind of high alcohol, that high energy which is being made. End of the day, wine is all about photosynthesis and science, right? It's about how agriculture is. And that's what wine is as well. The cooler climate areas won't have that much sunlight. So automatically, there's not a lot of energy being produced. No energy means less alcohol, less fruity flavors, all of that stuff. The opposite works for hot climate and hotter grapes and red grapes, which is why they're so much boldier and they're so much, they're higher in alcohol levels as well. White wines don't see a lot of oak aging.
Okay.
Which is why it's okay. That's why it's important to start with a white wine when you're starting off your journey and then gradually go towards red. If you're starting off, there are some people, for example, people who love coffee, they're okay with tasting red wines in the beginning because they're used to their palate is already used to that kind of aromas and taste and textures. White wines, you don't need to aerate too much unless they've seen too much oak in their life, like a Chardonnay, or a Chablis, which is a Chardonnay, but in Burgundy, they see a little bit of oak and a little bit more Napa style wines as well. There are some French wines, Chirin went to Alsace. There are a few very good Alsatian wines, which are oak aged, and it's good to aerate them as well.
I also love that. Wine here can be prohibitively expensive. I love that in certain parts of the world, you can go to a regular store, supermarket, and buy good wine or wine that tastes good to you and doesn't leave you feeling sick at a price point which is accessible. So I wish we had that in India. And Prithvi, I'd love to know from you.
We do.
Where do you think the Indian market is going? And tell me more. Tell me more about affordable, accessible, easy to find wines here.
Yes, there is this. Unfortunate, I don't know who spread this, but somebody I think spread this notion that price is equal to quality in wine, and that's not true. Price is never equal to quality in a wine. Quality is a personal preference, but quality is also, you can make quality out of anything. The problem with India, at least when it comes to wine, is that our import duties are extremely high. We have 160% import duty on wines, which makes things frightfully expensive. But otherwise, there's still a few very good wines which are available in stores in Delhi, in Gurgaon, in Bombay, in Bangalore. What's very important that I want more people to get into is who's importing your wine. Two or three very good importers they only import quality stuff from quality regions. So maybe a company like Wine Park, a company like Sonaris, these two companies are importing some very boutique, artisanal, value for money wines. They know what they're doing, and they're only importing stuff that they know that we like. So these guys are available in most of the retail stores, and they're available in hotels. But the problem is that it's just an awareness thing. People don't know too much about these wines. So the general public don't really know too much about these wines. So they also get sold out very quickly amidst the people who do know about these wines. But think of it this way also. Some wines are made, which are made in regions like Argentina or Chile. People tend to think, oh, they're cheap, so they must not be good, which is so wrong. The thing is...
No. Chilean wines are delicious.
They're really good. You know, Argentinian Malbecs are so good. Chilean Carmenere or a Chilean Sauvignon Blanc, they are very, very good wines. Why are they cheaper? Well, land cost there is cheaper. Getting manual labor there is cheaper. So cost of production of making that wine automatically becomes cheaper. Unless when you go to France where everything is so expensive, like cost of land can cost you millions for hardly any piece of land. It's very difficult to get manual labor there. And just cost of production of everything is extremely high, which is why wines from Europe can be a little bit more expensive than wines from South America or South Africa. And New World regions like South Africa and Australia and New Zealand make some amazing, amazing wines.
That's really, really interesting. So one of the things, Prithvi, that like you talked about was the fact that there are these two importers. I just want to know one more thing, because I'm very selfish. If you are in Gurgaon, because I just really want to know the answer to this. Or okay, fine. Let's say Gurgaon and parts of Delhi. Where do you what are the stores that we really need to go to this weekend? It's a long weekend. Tell us where to go.
Sure. So if you've been to Gurgaon recently, then you would have seen how all of the liquor stores in Gurgaon have become luxury boutique. I don't know what they become showrooms, to be honest.
Okay. Yeah, it's crazy. And in the middle of a village, they'd be huge.
Imagine. And now Delhi is going to do the same thing in the next few months, because the bidding for the policy just got over. So expect that in Delhi, some stores are going to become amazing. They're going to have some tasting rooms and stuff as well. So wine tasting rooms in Delhi, where if you're picking up a wine, you can also taste it right there. So stuff like that is coming up in Delhi. In Gurgaon, what we have is we have one on MG Road, right next to that Central Plaza Mall called the Liquor Warehouse. That Central Mall.
Right.
Called the Liquor Warehouse. That's an outstanding store for some very good wines. Another really good one is G-Town Wines. G-Town Wines are available in two locations that I know of. One is on Golf Course Road, right opposite the Sun City building, right next to where Baba's is. And the second store that they have is the Sector 41 L1, which is also really, really good. That's what they've made. I don't know what they've made that into.
You can find any
gin in the world there.
I drive from my house. My house is right next to that place, and it's on that Oberoi Road. If you just keep on going straight, right?
And
it's so the place itself around it is so decrepit, and then you have this beautiful store in the middle of it, and it literally looks like a showroom. It's so confusing.
It's unbelievable. The amount of money these guys are spending on just beautifying their liquor stores, it's outstanding. It's outstanding.
So, Prithvi, now one of the things that, two things that I do want to talk about before, and we are running a little long here, but two things. One is if I was to go to a store today as a general consumer who's okay with also just having Jacob's Creek because I just don't know what else to find, and if I'm a white wine lover, what are the three or four things I should look at when I'm looking at a bottle when I know I can't taste anything? How should I make a sensible purchase that I know I will enjoy as I go along?
Okay, since we're short on time, like you said, but there's a whole deal of things that you can look at. But very quickly, look at the front of the label and look at the back of the label. Okay, from the front of the label, here's what you can find out. You can find out what grape it is. You can find out what region it comes from. You can find out what the sub-region it comes from as well. You can find out, the back of the label can tell you what the wine will taste like, what it's supposed to taste like. Every bottle has them, but about 80% of the bottles that I've seen have them. They give you a good idea about, because there is a growing trend of consumer transparency, right? People want to know what they're drinking. For anything, that's consumer transparency. So you should be able to tell and look at alcohol percentage as well. I think that's also another very important thing to look at. So the region will tell you if the wine comes from a cool climate or a hot climate, which can give you a good idea of what it's supposed to taste like. A hotter climate wine would have a lot of robust aromas. Cooler climate wines would have less robust aromas, more fruity aromas, stuff like that. Cooler climates would have higher acidity in wine. Hotter climates would have less acidity in a wine. So stuff like that can also give you a very good idea about what you want. What is the kind of setting that you're looking at? If you're looking at something like for something special, right? Look at the way the bottle is made also. I think packaging also makes a very big difference. People who are investing in packaging you will always make a sale if you're investing in packaging as well. So look for a label that stands out. Look for a label that, what are the flavors that you're looking at? Are you looking at something fruity? Are you looking at something you know, which has oak, something chocolatey, something like that. Then go for something which is old world. Look at France, Spain, Italy. If you're looking at something which is more quick to drink, you can consumable, you're looking at something to drink, have a good time and get it over with, look at something which is more new world. Look at, like I said, you can look at Australia, you can look at South Africa, you can look at Napa Valley or the USA, the Sonoma, Argentina, Chile, stuff like that.
Interesting. And you did talk about like pairings, and that was really one of the other questions I had, was that, you know, one of the things that you see a lot online as well are these like detailed infographics of how wine pairs with a variety of foods. And one of the things that we were just navigating to like even just like think about was that, how are these things made? Are they also set in stone? And is it possible to actually go to a store, or at least, you know, if you have three or four wines that you know you like, build your own set of pairings?
Absolutely. Not only pertaining to food, wine pairs with everything. Wine pairs with a mood, wine pairs with music, wine pairs with the setting you're in. So wine can pair with everything. But in terms of food, there are a certain standard set of rules that we like to follow. But it's okay to experiment. It's very important to experiment. And I'll quickly tell you a few things that can give you a good idea about what are the kind of things that you should be pairing in. Like, why are they set in stone? But even though, like, it's the kind of breakable stone, so you can still experiment whatever you want. So
shouldn't sounds like a limestone.
Oh yeah, the limestone thing. Can I quickly tell you what that was?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was quite funny. So no matter what you do in a wine, the hint of its origin will always be found. And for the Riesling, the limestone is one of them. What does limestone smell and taste like? You had a question. Well, it's like lemony flavors, like zesty flavors, and it's got this really snappy minerality to it. So next time when you can smell minerals in a wine, like that kind of rock that you just know, it's lemony and it's minerally, and it has this white peach aroma to it, it's got to be a Riesling. And some Rieslings also smell like petrol. So petrol is another very good aroma to
it. What? Like what?
Yeah, a lot I of have Rieslings heard, smell like petrol.
I have heard it, like, people do write it like petrol, not on like labels, thankfully, but I've heard of like petrol being a standard of like taste or aroma. It's very fascinating.
Yeah. So pairings, salt and acidity are a wine's best friend when it comes to food, because of just how it is. But umami and sweetness, stuff with umami in it, can be a little difficult to pair with wine. If you're pairing something sweet with wine, make sure that the wine is at least as sweet as the food, or sweeter. Because what you want to do is whenever you're pairing food and wine, you want to make sure that the food is always on top. The wine should be able to complement the wine, the food. The wine should always complement the food. And the whole idea behind food and wine pairing is that they both really accentuate the flavors of each other. And it's all about flavor profiles coming together. And the structural components which are there in the food and in the wine, which need to pair. So to give you a very quick example, red wines with red meat, you know, we always say that. But the question is, why do we do that? We only do that because red wines have tannins, which bind itself very well to meat. Which is why it feels like a much better pairing, because that structural components just they die very well next to each other. But what if you add something very oily with a red wine? Then what happens is that you get a very metallic taste because of the high umami component in that stuff, in that fish. So that's why whenever you have something fatty, like fish, it's best to do it with something more acidic, like a white wine. So that it cuts through that fat and kind of squeezes all of that nice aromas and stuff out of there as well. So, I mean, they're not really set in stone, but you can. It's very important to experiment. I once tasted a tomato soup with a rosé wine, and it paired off very well, even though it was against all standards of wine pairing. So experiment, and that's the best way to do it.
Interesting. So you're just telling us, buy and drink more wine and talk to you a lot more so that we can basically create our own. Cool. This is the classic wine sales pitch. No? It's like, you have to drink to understand. We can't tell you everything.
I love it. I'm such a good student. Like, I'm so totally going to take my teacher's advice. Except it's known and I don't have a drinking problem, so I'm not going to start right now. Wow, that's a lot of learning. Thanks a ton for being such a good teacher, Prithvi. I feel like I've understood more in the last 30 minutes than I have in the last 30 years. So compliments to you for that.
You're not 30 yet. I don't know why you're saying that.
I'm going to be but thanks for reminding me that I'm young. Thank you so much for being here with us, Prithvi. We have one more segment that we'd love to cover. But before that, I'm going to take a short break.
It's fairly simple. Shirin will ask you questions. You have to answer very, very quickly. If we don't like your answer, we judge you a little, but that may or may not happen. That's okay. But that's pretty much it.
As long as I get a gift hamper in the end.
No. And also, no.
Our company is the gift hamper, Prithvi. Come on.
Wow. But you know what, Prithvi? If you have fun, feel free to send us wine.
See, I've already had a lot of fun. I've been having a lot of fun since. Sorry, guys. I know I talk too much.
Wonderful.
So please excuse that.
No. It's a podcast. You're supposed to talk.
Thank God.
I think it's the passion, right? Like, if you are passionate about something, right? You will talk a lot about it.
If you're talking to me about politics, I won't be talking this much, you know? It's just...
Yeah. I would.
Natasha,
explain the rules, please. Okay, I'm going to say this again. Okay, Archit, explain the rules. Go for it.
The rules are pretty easy. They're inspired deeply by our love for Coffee with Karan. Shirin will ask you a question. You have a second to answer. So clear your mind. This is the only answer you get. And if we don't like the answer, we may judge you, but that may or may not be on air. That's pretty much it.
Okay, let's go. Are you ready, Prithvi?
I don't think so, but let's do this.
Okay, cool. Ice in a wine, yes or no?
No. Disgusting.
Example of a name that you recently learned how to pronounce.
Gebustraminie.
Oh my God.
Tell us more about that. What? Sounds like a weapon.
Gebustraminie is a grape variety. But it's a great grape variety and it tastes amazing. It's a full-bodied wine. Tastes of peaches and floral stuff and it pairs so well with food. It's like a red, but it's not. Get it?
Interesting.
Oh, it's a red. Yeah. I didn't even think
of that. No, it's not. It's a white wine. But it's like a red, it's not a red.
With red grapes? I don't know. What?
Sorry.
I know that. Anyway, moving on.
I don't want to. Yes.
Favorite snack with wine? And no, you may not say cheese.
Burgers and fries.
Yum.
Ooh, interesting.
Burgers and fries. This is very good. You're doing very well, I must say. Pat on the back. Now tell me, perfect temperature to store wine at in Delhi in June?
14 degrees.
Okay.
For red, 11 degrees for white.
14 for red, 11 for white. Please make notes, guys. Okay, would you rather drink wine from a can or wine that has been open for a week?
Now from a can. I like wines in cans if they're good.
Okay. The one wine you'd like to save for a special day?
A Louis Rodre Cristal.
Say more.
It's a champagne. It's extremely exclusive. It's very difficult to find. There's only a few made. And it's a good champagne to open once in a while.
Okay, then. Well done.
Thank you.
There will be no hamper, but you will have our addresses soon, so you can send us wine.
I get to send you wine. Okay, great.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome.
I don't know why I did so well. I shouldn't have. I tried for this. Oh, no. Okay, great.
All right. Thank you so much, Prithvi. For coming all the way to talking to us about this. I know this has been a long conversation in progress, and I don't think that we are done with this conversation. So we definitely need to do some sort of follow-up conversations. And I think we've been planning to do something as a video format. So we'll get in touch with you for that, because that's definitely something that we need to do. Torture you with some wines and help understand if you can actually taste them. Do an actual torture test for sommeliers. That'll be fun.
Okay, yeah. Listen, we don't use the word torture just like essay. So we'll just trouble you.
No, it's okay.
Given the state of our country, torture is very real.
yeah, fair. So if you or if you as our listeners, if you're interested in learning more about spirits and alcohols and also want to like just, you know, look at someone who's been vetted by Ryan Reynolds, you definitely have to go check out his Instagram page at @PrithviNagpal and check out his all of the other publications that he's constantly been on. Thank you so much, Prithvi, for being here. We had such a lovely time talking to you.
Thank you, guys. Really thank you for having me. I had a great time, and I hope we can do this again over some wine and discuss flavors, and then we can talk about where do flavors in the wine come from.
This episode of Getting Lost with Archit and Shirin was produced by Natasha Rati Kapoor, edited by Ananya Gupta, and written and conceptualized by Shirin Rai Gupta and Archit Agarwal.